Okay.
We're going to discuss Parshat Korach today, and we just got a chance to look and reread chapter 16 on our own. And basically, I'm going to sum up what we did, kind of in a very brief way, really a few steps, right? So number one is we have a little bit of an introduction. Korach comes. Who comes with him, tells us there was Dathan, Datan, and Abiram. There are these 250 men who are of prestige and status. It tells us that there was a complaint. The complaint that they want, there's a complaint, right? And then we have Moses trying to resolve all these things. He calls to Dathan and Abiram, and Dathan and Abiram, they're not interested in coming. They then have a test of these ketoret, this fire pan offering. And it tells us who will be accepted, who will not be accepted. In the middle of this, Moses prays that whoever, that God should answer the right one. We have the earth swallowing up the 250 men, right? And we also have the people who brought these fire pans get burnt up. It says that they get burnt up, right? So that's really the chapter, the whole chapter 16 in a nutshell. And the question is, there are a lot of questions, right? There are a lot of questions. Because the first question we got is, what are they complaining about? The first question I have is, what are the complaints? Or what is the complaint? It's not necessarily clear what the complaint is. And the second question I'll ask is that if you go through the text, as we said, there are two different punishments, right? We have the punishment of the earth swallowing them up, that's the one that made the movie. And then you have the punishment of these 250 people that had these burnt offerings, right? And they got burnt up, they burnt alive. So there are two different punishments, and it seems to be it's unclear what exactly the complaints are. Anybody else have any other questions? Those are my two major questions. Anybody, any other questions? No? Ira, you're good?
I have a question.
You have a question, yes.
In the beginning, first reminded me of Jethro. This is too much for you.
Right. The language. Rab Lechem B'nai Levi. This is too much for you, B'nai Levi. The language is very clear. That is a term that's used on several occasions, primarily in the story of Yitro. So, a very good eye that you picked that up, right? And it's also somewhat Moshe in his complaint. He says, this is too much for me. When in Parshat Balotcha, when he doesn't want to, can't provide the people with all the meat. So there is a direct line. We're not going to tackle that at all, but it's a very good point to put up.
But the question I have is, Moses heard and fell on his face. He spoke to Korach and said, in the morning, Hashem, who was he to speak for Hashem?
Meaning, does Moshe bring the sign himself? Right? Right. He says, in the morning, God's going to bring a sign. Did he have a discussion with God beforehand? Did God say, hello, I have other plans tomorrow. I wasn't planning on doing that. If Moshe is doing this independently, where else in our Tanakh, you have to think about, I always say, it's always best to know in order to understand the Tanakh, the Bible, you have to know the whole thing. Right? So where else do we see that someone, like a cowboy, pretty much, takes initiative on his own and says, God's going to do this? So Elijah at Mount Carmel. Elijah before Mount Carmel says, I'm going to take away the rain for 3 years. God will remove the rain for 3 years and it won't rain. And it's unclear if God ever said this to him. He kind of does this independently. So Moshe, who probably had the ability to do this, however, that God almost followed his command, right? That's what it sounds like. But it sounds, at least from the text, that this Moshe initiated that. And that God is going to, you're going to see God's sign. It's something you've never seen before, this phenomenon. It's a good question. Okay. What else? Any other questions?
Yes.
Yes.
Don't they say, why should we listen to you?
Right. Well, so we have, so let's jump to your point, Pat, okay? Because I want to highlight that we're not really sure what the complaint is. On the one hand, we have a complaint where the people come over and say, you've done too much. You have too many roles, right? What are your roles? You are, sounds like, you do too many things, right? Why should you also be serving the temple, which he doesn't? Who serves in the temple? Aaron, right? And in fact, in the text, it even says, Moshe says, why are you complaining to Aaron? God chose him, right? I always describe it as if you're in a play, right? You're in the school play, and you didn't get the... Everybody wants the main part. Why? Because everybody wants the main role, right? Why wouldn't they? And so you go to the person who gets the main role, right? Joe, who got the main role. You're angry at him. Why? Joe says, why are you angry at me? I didn't do anything. The director told me to take this role. Be angry at the director. So Moshe says, why are you angry at Aaron? Aaron didn't choose this role. The director, talk to God, right? So it sounds like they're complaining about that they should have the role as a Kohen, right? Right? They want to be the role of the Kohen. Now here's the question. When they're complaining about to be the role of the Kohen, it's really two things. And look at the language. He says, when they gather on, let's look at verse 3. They gathered together against Moses and against Aaron and said to them, it is too much for you, for the entire assembly, all of them are holy, and Hashem is among them. So what are they complaining about? Are they complaining that Aaron should not be the Kohen Gadol, right? Or that they and that Korach or somebody else should be the Kohen Gadol? Or are they complaining that everybody should be the Kohen Gadol? Meaning, no one should have a role. We're all equal, right? Everybody's holy. We're all equal. We all heard the voice of God at Mount Sinai. Who says that you're any different than we are, right? Everybody's, and so are they complaining that they want equality? In other words, that they want, let's look at it this way. Do they want new leadership or do they want no leadership, right?
Is it to
put themselves or to put no leadership? I know there's a difference.
Yeah.
One is they don't like these leaders, right? And who says to you, you should be a leader, I should be a leader? That's one possibility. But the other possibility is that no, they're not saying that. They should say, they're saying we need no leaders. Why should anybody be a leader? We should have a society where we're all holy and there are no leaders whatsoever. So the real issue, so it seems to be centered around the service in the temple, right? Because Moshe says to Korach, "What's your problem? You isn't it enough that you have a role in the temple as well?" And he says, "No, I want the role, right? I want the role." So it's not about necessarily leadership; it's about the service in the temple, service in the Mishkan. They say, "Why should Aaron be serving in the Mishkan?" And the truth is that there's clearly smells of nepotism, right? Moshe's the head; he's the guy in charge, big kahuna, and that's why Moshe's the big kahuna, and Aaron's the Kohen Gadol, right? That's why you like that, right? So Moshe's in charge, and he needed somebody to be the high priest, so he said, hey, my brother will do it, right? That's how do you become a rabbi of a town in Israel? You have to be somebody's nephew, right? That's how it works. It's all nepotism.
God didn't designate him.
Well, Moshe is saying God did, and it sounds from like Korach is saying, no, I don't trust you. I don't believe God. I don't have an announcement. There was no email that went out from God that said, we just want to announce that the Kohen Gadol was chosen. As it turns out, it's Moshe's brother, Aaron. He is the one who's going to be the Kohen Gadol. And Korach is coming along, what sounds like from his congregation, and is saying, hey, Either one, I should be the Kohen Gadol, Korach should be the Kohen Gadol, or two, everybody should be the Kohen Gadol, or everybody should be a Kohen. In other words, we shouldn't limit it. People always say this to me all the time. Why do we have a status system or a class system? Thank you. A class system. Why do we have specific Kohanim? Why do we have Kohanim? If you're not a Kohen, you can't do the service, right? This doesn't relate to us as much because we don't have the temple. But if we had the temple, this would be very, very clear. There are those who can serve in the temple, and there are those who can't. That's it. I am a Joe Jew, and I'm a regular Israelite, I cannot serve in the temple. And why is that fair? And Korach, at least it sounds like, is actually saying that. Incidentally, how do we know even more so that that's really what he's saying? Meaning, I'm going to argue that it's not that they're asking for one of them to be the Kohen Gadol, although I'm not 100% sure, because remember what happens. They end up bringing, they all bring fire pans, But 250 people bring fire pans, right? And they say, okay, whoever is fire pan, which is the Ketorah, these offerings, whoever is offering is accepted, so then they're the ones who can serve in the temple, right? So either this is like Russian roulette, which is that, so it's Aaron and these 250 people, and it's one of them is going to be chosen, right? That's what it is. And what happens if you bring a foreign fire, a strange fire, an Eitz Hara? What happened to Nadav and Avihu, Aaron's children? They, like Aaron's sons, what happened? They were killed, by the way, the same way that these people were killed, incidentally, right? So either they're all going in knowing that only one of them is going to come out standing, or more likely, they're all going in to say, we believe we're all going to be accepted. Because we believe in the idea of pluralism, that nobody is greater than others. There should not be a class system. Everybody should be able to serve in the temple. Who's to say that one person is greater than the other? Which, we do believe that to a certain extent, right? Yes?
Yes, but they're expressing their disdain for Moshe and Aaron specifically. We learned that, we got that position by merit.
Did they get it? They got the position by appointment.
By appointment, but they also earned it along the way.
That's all very nice. I'm in the play.
Right.
I think I deserve that position to be the leader in the play.
Right.
So have the major role. You've been in theater, right? When you didn't get the role that you wanted, did you think that you didn't deserve it?
Absolutely.
Every time you deserved it, right? Right? They made a mistake. It was nepotism. They knew his father. They knew his uncle. Or whatever, of course. So it's natural when you don't get selected, you're going to feel this way. And I don't care who pointed you, right? They were. My resume is just as good as everybody else's. That's what
but
they
in
did.
This case, the appointed person was gone.
Right, except they go to Moshe and say, well, you appointed him. It doesn't seem like they're complaining against Moshe. It seems like they're complaining against Aaron, that Aaron's position. And nowhere did it say that Aaron was chosen. Nowhere did it say that God chose Aaron. It sounds like, you know, I'm the rabbi, and I hired a chazan. And the chazan happens to be my brother, right? This is what they do with Chabad, right? Their uncle, their grandson, they're this, they're that, they're the same thing, right? You know why? Because they're in those institutions, there is no board. That's how they make the decision. So here, right, they're saying, you're running your position. Who says you have the right to make these appointments?
Well, they also had a role, though. They were Levites, weren't they?
They were Levites, and Moshe says, what's wrong with your role? And he says, I don't want that role. I want the lead role.
Speak to God.
That's what Moshe says. What are you complaining to Aaron? Talk to God. Well, that is their complaint. But the complaint isn't necessarily, it's either, as we said, one of the two. Either they're complaining because they want, that one of them wants to be the Kohen Gadol, or, and I think it's more likely, based on their response, all of them want to be the Kohen Gadol. All of them are going to, because everybody deserves that role.
Because if Korach became the Kohen Gadol, the others would complain about Korach.
Correct, right? So it sounds like that. So the argument doesn't work, which is why I think, that's why I think, at least I would speculate, that it's not they were looking that Korach should be the Kohen Gadol, and in fact, it's unclear that Korach is even among the 250 people who bring the fire pans. It's unclear, right? It's not clear. We'll see.
He seems to be
the spokesperson.
Yeah.
So,
which is
usually the spokesperson is the one, I want that job.
Right. We're going to find that out in a second. Hold that thought. Yes?
The other three people, they've
been
are all from the tribe of Reuben.
Right.
Which is the firstborn.
Right. So clearly, they've been harboring, and 250 people, most of them from the tribe of Reuben, have been harboring this resentment that they lost their firstborn rights, that their father gave over to Yehuda, and they lost the right to serve in the temple as well. And they've only been harboring it for about 300 years, right? So that's a long... it's like the South, right? The South is still upset that they about the Civil War. That's why they waved the Confederate flag, right? Get over it. Remember, but they still haven't gotten over it yet.
This is not the only time with the firstborn. We've had many stories.
Right. So there is a rivalry throughout the book of Genesis about the firstborn, right? And obviously it's a natural issue. It's a natural issue. But here, God is very present. So, You know, you would, and Moshe is saying, I didn't make this decision, but they're questioning that, they're challenging that. So what we have clearly is, we have clearly the complaint about Aaron, right? That he should not have taken the role. But we also, and it seems to be that it's not one of them that thinks they deserve to be Kohen Gadol over anybody else. It seems to be, at least, it seems to imply that they're expecting all of us should have the right to be able to serve in the temple the way we the way it's commanded, which is very altruistic, incidentally, right? It's not. We don't believe in another god.
It's unrealistic.
It's unrealistic, absolutely. And then we can have a whole discussion of why there needs to be a class system, which is not for today, but it's a very good point. But at least it seems to be that that's their issue. Now yes, Ira.
What happened to Aaron's son Pelet?
So that's in the midrash goes off on Aaron Pelet, says that his wife basically saved him from this whole thing. I'll tell you the midrash afterwards. Okay. What is interesting to note, though, is, and I saw this is all based on an article that I found by Rabbi Menachem Liefeld, who's a wonderful teacher of Bible, of Tanakh. He lives in Israel, and you can find much of his stuff online at tanakh.org. And he had a beautiful talk on this. Basically, he showed me, in this article, a completely different way of looking at this story. And I want to share it because we just established what's the fight, what's the issue. The issue is they're complaining about Aaron. They want everybody to be a Kohen Gadol. However, it seems to be that they're along the line, in the middle of this, there's another issue. Because when they come, Moshe reaches out, as a good leader does, right? People ask me, what do rabbis do? My primary job is I'm a firefighter, right? I put out fires. Because if you have a rabbi, and there's always fires that blow up, so the rabbi kind of cools them down before they become big fires. So I try to put out fires. That's what I do a lot of my time. That's what many rabbis do. So Moshe is Moshe Rabbeinu. He's our rabbi. And he is trying to put out a fire. And so what does he do? He says to verse 12, Moses sent forth to summon Dathan and Abiram, Dathan and Abiram, the son of Eliab. He sent them a message. He said, listen, I want to talk to you, right? First, he has a conversation with Korach. And then he has a conversation privately. I'm going to talk to Dathan and Abiram privately. So every once in a while, you'll get a phone call from me and you'll say, oh, well, the rabbi wants me to calm things down. That's what Moshe is trying to do. And what is their response? Chutzpah, right? Tremendous chutzpah. We shall not go up. Is it not enough? Verse 12. 13 now. It is not enough that you brought us from a land flowing with milk and honey to cause us to die in the wilderness. Where's the land flowing with milk and honey?
They're talking about Egypt.
Egypt's the land. Where you sent, right? You sent us a land flowing with milk and honey. Right? Oh, by the way, you were slaves. You were tortured. Genocide. Revisionist history. That's not mentioned here. They forgot that. You're going to cause us to die in the wilderness, yet you seek to dominate us, even to dominate further. Moreover, you did not bring us to a land flowing with milk and honey, nor give us a heritage of field and vineyard. Even if you gouge out the eyes of those men, we shall not go up. We're not going with you. Now, this complaint, which is a pretty strong complaint, because they're saying, remember, where is this taking place? It's actually a debate. But assuming that we're looking at chronological order of the Torah, last week's portion was Parshat Shelach. What happened in Parshat Shelach? The spies. And the aftermath, the Jewish people are condemned to die in the desert. Right? So now, they're gonna wander for 38 years and go where? Nowhere.
Nowhere.
Can you imagine what that's like, by the way? Can you imagine the morale of the nation, of all these people who have nothing to do, and there's no cable television, and there's nothing to do except they know they're going to go in circles or nowhere for 38 years until they all die.
But the first world is supposed to do that. Do they know they're going to walk in circles? They don't know where Israel is.
They know they're not going in. Because at the end, the aftermath of the sin of the spies was no one other than Kalev and Yehoshua are entering the land. So they all know. Anybody who saw this said, oh boy, we're going to die here. Whenever it happens, oh, we're not going into the land.
Or the people
who did go into the land. Only Kalev and Yehoshua.
Right.
And the younger than 20.
Well, Yehoshua became the leader.
No. Moses didn't go into the land.
Moses, that's later. At this point, Moses is going into the land. right? At this
but
point,
he's still hanging out with
he's still there also. Remember that they didn't. They died over every year over a 40-year period because you can't 38 and a half year period. You can't kill them all out, then they won't reproduce. So they would live their lives knowing that they're not going anywhere.
You said no cable, but weren't they studying Torah?
It's all very nice. I'm sure they were studying Torah with Gemara and Rashi and Tosafot. Whatever they were doing, right? Whatever they were doing, they were going nowhere. They were in a daze. They were going nowhere. They're staying in the desert. What are we doing today? The same as we do every day, right? They're doing. They weren't wandering aimlessly because they would travel with the clouds. They had whatever the GPS told them where to go, but they're not. You know, I mean, clearly there is because that's what's happening right now. What's happening right now is that Dathan and Abiram comes along and says, Moses, I'm going to go to you. Guess what? Where is following you gotten us so far? Remember, you were supposed to take us to the land that's flowing with milk and honey? Well, where is that land that's flowing with milk and honey? I just saw, or I heard from God, that we're all going to die here. We're never going to see this land. So you are a failed leader. That's what he's saying. So why should I follow you? I'm surprised. More people didn't say this, by the way. Right? Because, now, they knew what they did wrong, but there's tremendous frustration. They're just walking around. They're just going nowhere. There is no goal. I was wondered what they did. Like, how did they wake up in the morning knowing that nothing is changing? They're never going to get to their destination. They're told this. And so, here, they come in. They come into Moshe, and they say, we're not listening to you. You are a failed leader. We will never follow you. What is interesting to note is that that's a very different complaint. In other words, until now, the complaint was, Freddie, if you shut that off, that would be great, okay? Until now, the complaint was about Aram. Right. Now, at least for these people, the complaint is very different. The complaint is about Moshe. They don't mention Aaron at all. What Rabbi Leitag wants to show us is there are actually two revolts and rebellions going on simultaneously at the same time. One is a group that seems to be led by Korach about the Kohen Gadol against Aaron. And the other is a group that seems to be led by Korach against Moshe, saying Moshe shouldn't be the leader and we shouldn't follow Moshe. And these stories are actually going on at the exact same time. And now a lot of things make more sense. Yes, Arnie?
Why would he summon these two knowing he's going to get complaints from them?
Well, he didn't. He was trying to make peace. So he calls over to them. In other words, imagine this scene, right? The scene comes along and they say, there's a whole group of people and they come over to Moshe and they're like, blah, 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 right? And how come? And Moshe says, Boker, let's talk about this in the morning. That's what he says, which is very smart also, which means he doesn't respond right away and get angry, right? He says, let's talk about it in the morning. Let's talk about it in the morning. Tomorrow we'll try something else. I'll talk about it in the morning. Go back to your homes and we'll talk about it in the morning. And then, what does he try to do? He tries to go behind the scenes, get his ducks in the row, and try to calm everybody down. It's a great leadership. That's great leadership. Right. It doesn't work, but it's still great leadership. That's a great leadership lesson. Yes?
Well, can't you take everything that's written in the Bible and apply it to every day?
Oh, like Pat, that's why I love you.
Wait, the Reform movement and the
I'm not going
Orthodox
there.
Movement, it's the same as what you just said, the two revolts.
Okay. The Orthodox movement was not a revolt. however, but Pat, we'll talk history at a different time. I got 10 minutes, Pat.
Every
so
that's in here, you can
that is the point. Yes, right. And the most important lesson of Parshat Korach is: if you mess with the rabbi, God will catch you. Right. Always remember this during contract talks. Whenever it's important to remember this.
By the way,
that's why it's my favorite portion.
Is Moses a Kohen Gadol?
Moses is not a Kohen Gadol. He's from the tribe of Levi. He's never. Moses is not allowed, after the first week, Moses is not allowed to serve in the temple either.
So Aaron
is the Kohen Gadol.
He
didn't convert, because there were no Kohanim.
Right?
There's no Kohanim. Right? It's like when we go to shul and there's no Incan Kohen. Right? There were no Kohanim. There were all Levim. And then there was a designation of Aaron and his children that will follow to become Kohanim, with Aaron being the Kohen Gadol. And that was the institution of the Kohanim. Okay? So what I want to do, and we're running a little short on time, I wish I didn't tell that funeral story beforehand. It was a good story. Put me back, right? Is I want to show you something. Okay? And this is, again, for Rabbi Liebknecht. I'm going to show you these charts that Rabbi Liebknecht put together. He likes it. Look how amazing you are. Okay. You like this? I said, I didn't do this. Okay. If you look at the charts, we actually have a breakdown of what we call group one and group two. Okay? So, for example, group one, we have 250 men. And what happens to the 250 women? Their argument, if you look in column one, they're arguing against the priesthood, right? Likely the reason, and specifically against Aaron, and likely the reason, at least it seems to imply, because they want equality, right? That's what we establish. Where do they go? They go to the Ohel Moed, which is what makes sense, because that is another name for the Mishkan, right? First of all, that's the office of Moshe. And that's the other name for the Mishkan, where the Mishkan is. And so therefore, that's where they go to complain. And what happens in their punishment, as we read, they are all consumed by fire. Right? Incidentally, as we said before, I'm not sure we mentioned it, the sons of Aaron brought a strange fire that they weren't commanded. And how did they die? They were consumed by fire. It's the same thing. That's the punishment. If you try to bring an offering that you weren't commanded as the Kohen, as a strange fire, as a Kohen, and you're not commanded to do that, that's how you die. Okay? That's group one. But there's group two. And group two, at least, is led by Datan and Aviram, Edward G. Robinson, yeah. Right? From the tribe of Reuven, right? We don't know who else they are, but they're followers. It just specifies them. They are complaining against, not Aaron, but Moshe. They're angry about the leadership, right? They and its failure of leadership. So they want new leaders. They want new leaders. They're not looking for equality. They want a new leader. Moshe failed. That's what they're saying. Now, what's interesting to note, I'm not sure if we can highlight this, is that Moshe goes over to them, and the scene of Datan and Aviram actually takes place, and there are a few references to it in various verses. We're not going to look at it now. Not where the Ohel Moed is. It says it's constantly taking place, actually, in the Mishkan Korach Datan v'Aviram. It happens in the tribe of Reuven, where Datan and Aviram live. That's in their tent. That's where it's happening. And you'll see in the text that's where Moshe keeps going back and forth. Moshe ends up there, right? And in fact, it seems like, again, this is all happening at the same time. And we're going to go through the verses in a second with the second chart. That at the same time that Moshe is fighting with Korach and this congregation who was against Aaron, he's also dealing with another rebellion against him from a different group. Which, of course, makes sense. Why would it make sense? Because it makes sense that if you're going to have people start complaining, and what happens when people start complaining? More people start complaining, right? So it's a domino effect. So what does Korach have to do with the tribe of Reuven? Nothing. But he went and found, you know what? And he found all these people that weren't happy, and he started this revolt, the rebellion through there. Yes?
This doesn't seem fair. You have said that we learn, should apply to our everyday life. So in other words, if you protest, then you're going to die?
There's protest and there's protest. Let's finish the class, and I'll address the lesson that we have from this, okay? Let's look at the second. Chart for a second, okay? So we have our introduction, and we look and see which group are we talking to. We have our introduction, and the introduction we're talking to both groups, right? It tells us Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar. Korach came leading this group. Who are the group? It says 200 Datan and Aviram and On ben Pelah and the 250 men, right? They all seem to be talking, and they hear their complaints, and they all seem to be talking together. Then you have verse 5, which talks about their complaint about the Kohuna against Aaron. That's only group 1, right? That's group 1 who's complaining about the Kohanim. Then you have the summoning of Dathan and Abiram and their refusal. That's group 2, who's complaining about Moshe, right? Then you have the test of the Ketoret, where they bring the fire pan offering. Whose test is that? Whose test is that for?
Aaron.
For those who are testing Aaron. Who's testing Aaron? Which one? Group 1 or group 2?
Group
1. So only group 1 is involved in the test of the Ketoret. Then you have Moshe prays that God should punish only the guilty, right? Which it seems to be perhaps for both. You have the earth swallowing Dathan and Abiram and their followers. Whose punishment is that? That's the second group. That's when they come in and Moshe says, I need you, God, to come up with a phenomenon. They're challenging my authority. Right? They're challenging my authority. I can't prove to them myself that I'm running the show. God, you're the only one who could do that. That's why I already asked that question. And so the punishment fits the crime. You're challenging my authority, then God will swallow you up of the earth and say, no, it is only Moshe who is going to be the authority. Versus the second, which is the last thing you'll have in verse 35, where the second punishment, which is the punishment for the 250 men, that is specifically around the temple. As we said, the punishment for bringing a strange fire is consummation by fire. And therefore, they get punished there at the same time. What is the common denominator in this? Or I should say, where, more precisely, where is Korach throughout all this? Which group is Korach with? Is he with group number 1 or group number 2?
With both.
Ironically, the fact that we have him in the introduction tells us that he is in both. He is leading both groups. As we said, who does this, right? We're watching the debates these days, right? And they're all coming in and complaining about the administration, they're complaining about this, they're complaining about that. What's the goal of the politician? If they're trying to, what? To get elected. And how do you get elected? So you could say how great you are, and you disparage the other person. Now, in order to disparage the incumbent, what do you have to do? This is all politics. It doesn't matter what politics is there. This is the same thing in 2019 as in 1799, right? There's no difference. So how do you disparage? You have to say he's not in favor of abortion rights, right? And I'm in favor of abortion rights. I'm in favor of abortion rights. I'm very upset about that. And then he goes to the next, and then the next person goes, well, I don't care about abortion rights. Right? That's not my problem. That's not my cause. They said, well, he's not in favor of Social Security. Oh, Social Security, that affects me. You basically go line by line to try to galvanize as much dissension. You're running a campaign. Where do you stand on health care? Well, the incumbent stands this way and I stand here. Oh, then I'm with you. Right? But you have to find different things that'll galvanize the truth. And Korach is a great politician. Korach is organizing each group, and he's really in two different places to say that, to be part of, to try to galvanize both of them. Right? By the way, where is Korach finally punished? So there's a midrash, I think it was the Ibn Ezra who said that Korach was actually punished both. He was first consumed by fire, and then he was swallowed up on the earth, because he was really part of both disagreements. So now Arnie comes along and says, well, what's the lesson? So there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot who tells us the lesson. The lesson is something called Amachloket L'Shem Shemayim, Amachloket Shelo B'Shem Shemayim. What is the agenda, right? I have a machloket L'Shem Shemayim. What would be an example of machloket that's for the sake of heaven? Hillel and Shammai. Hillel and Shammai disagreed on a million things all over the Talmud. Hillel, Beit Shammai, etc., etc. Guess what? At the end of the day, they went home, they married each other's daughters, and sons and daughters. It was not a problem. As opposed to the machloket of Korach and his congregation, as Mishnah says, they were not the Shem Shammai. In other words, was their goal that they believe in something, or is it all about ego? And it seems to be very clear that it's pretty much about ego.
It was about ego.
right. Everything they said, by the way, isn't wrong. Isn't the whole nation holy? Yes.
Is Moshe a penalty?
It is. It is. Because, well, what happens when you were... It's heavy penalty. What are they trying to do? They're trying to break down society. They're trying to... You're thinking of... You grew up in the 60s, right? So you're thinking of protests, right? And what happens in a regular protest? A regular protest... So Gandhi comes along and introduces the idea of passive... passive resistance. That was a novel idea. Typically speaking, again, go back 3,000 years. Typically speaking, if there is a protest, what's supposed to happen? They're going to kill the leader, and they're going to start their own country. And they're gonna, that's what happens. And what happens to the leader? What does the leader do? He responds by killing them back. It's an all-out war. That's what's happening, right? So Moshe says, I'm not fighting with them. God, you take care of this. Right? You tell me, if they are altruistic, if their motivation is genuine, then fine, then we'll have a conversation. But if their motivation is evil, it's all about ego, and they want power, etc., so then God's going to strike them down, and that's what happens. So the lesson of this is, be careful where you put your eggs in. Be careful where you put which basket you put your eggs in. And think about what the motivation is. There are people like Korach all over the place. All over the place. Right? And their agenda, they might say their agenda is your agenda, but it's not your agenda. Korach doesn't care about anything. Except for one thing. He cares about himself. And so... Again, there's a rebellion happening. Again, think of it this way. A rebellion happens. When there's a rebellion, you squash the rebellion. If you can negotiate the rebellion, guess what will happen tomorrow, right? And Moshe tries. And Moshe tries it, and what did they say? I will rather die than be followed by you. We're looking for new leadership. You're out. And then what happens? And then you got 3 million people going in a million different directions.
Chaos.
You have chaos.
So the moral of the story is all these communists read the Bible.
That's ironic if you say that. The moral of the story is always be nice to your rabbi. That's always nice.
Isn't the basis of this story that Korach is actually dismissing God? Because everything that Moses did, he did at the guidance of God.
Well, he's dismissing.
That
complaint against Moshe, again, we have two different complaints according to the school of thought. That complaint about Moshe in general is saying that I don't believe that God told you this. That's what they're saying. They're saying, I don't believe that God gave you these instructions. I believe you did this the whole time yourself.
And where's their belief in God then?
Where is their belief? Well, they started believing when the earth swallowed them up, right?
Right?
That's when they started.
No,
so Moshe says, I need a phenomenon like no one's ever seen before because they need to know it didn't come from me. And they need to know it came from you because these people are not believing otherwise.
They think the sea parted magically.
They saw it, Sinai. Apparently, they needed a reminder. Because, again, no, people have selective memories. Yeah.